My name is Steve Hitchcock, and the topic that we wish to address is, does God read financial statements? And the subtitle is, the challenge of the modern workplace for Christian ministry in daily life. And because I was so busy in the modern workplace, I didn't get my bibliography together in time, but I do want to just indicate that one of the books that I've read recently that's very, to me, very interesting is Modern Work and Human Meaning, and it's from Westminster Press, and I will try to bequeath it to the library here and also encourage the bookstore. It's one of the books. There's also, I do want to say that there's a whole section in the bookstore that's called The Ministry of the Laity in the World, which I thought was a very interesting way to put it. Often ministry of the laity has come to mean that the laity get to do the work that the clergy don't want to do to maintain the church building or the church institution. And the section that's in the bookstore, I've looked at the books, and almost all the books in there are excellent. I still think that that Bill Deal's book, Christianity in Real Life, is one of the best places to start. And that book is one of those that's in the bookstore. Well,
what's the name of that book?
Okay, let me just. Bill Deal is a former executive of Bethlehem Steel, lives in Pennsylvania, and someone wrote me a letter once and said, Steve, you really ought to do something about this. I get letters like this from time. When the history of the Lutheran Church and the last half of the 20th century is written, Bill Deal deserves a special place because he, more than anyone else, has raised the issue of the ministry of the laity in American Lutheranism.
And he's been here.
And he's been here.
I think they're taped.
Yes, that's a very good recommendation. His tapes are worth listening to, as are Judy Deal, his wife. She's written a very good book about the ministry of women. And I don't know the specific title of it, but Judy Deal is his wife's name. Well, I am Steve Hitchcock. I work for a direct marketing agency, advertising agency, whose clients are nonprofit organizations and elected officials or politicians, as we sometimes call them. And my job is to help those people raise money to either run their campaigns, or in my particular case, I work with nonprofit organizations to help them raise money to do their jobs as nonprofit organizations. I spend half of my time working with clients, and the other half of the time I spend on the senior management team that runs the business, which is a medium-sized business. As I was talking to Will here before, most of my day is spent listening to other people complain about other people. But it is a challenge. Another part of my life, and perhaps the reason that Elmer has invited me to be here, is I volunteer with an organization called New Models for Ministry, and it's an effort of a group of people in the Bay Area to encourage the ministry of people in daily life. And I will pass around a copy of our newsletter if you'd like to have one, and if you'd like to be on the mailing list without obligation and receive the copies of New Ministries as they're published free of charge, we'd be glad to do that. We receive contributions from a number of individuals around the country, which makes it possible for us to share the newsletter with others. So I'll start this here and this here. The theme for our time at Holden is Christ is the memory of our future. And I've been intrigued with that title because I think for those of us who are in the church, that minority of the American population who are practicing mainline Protestants. I just want to step back. At Mal Warwick and Associates. We're in Berkeley, California, which is a rarefied environment to start out with. Over half of the people I work with are Jewish, and there is, of those people, there are 50 people in the company, there are probably a handful of practicing religious persons. And this one Jewish woman says, "I've never met a practicing Protestant in my life." For those of us who are practicing Protestants, I think the future is here now. The other thing that I think that I am more and more convinced of is that the church is ill-equipped to live in this future, to be the vehicle to communicate to the world that Christ is the hope of our salvation. As I've said earlier, I think the church as an institution is a declining business, and it is dealing with issues of survival. How does it survive as an organization in this times of declining business? And so it's not very well equipped to help us, who are laypersons, to carry out our ministries in everyday life. And so I'm pleased that Holden is addressing that issue, trying to give us the nurture, the resources, and the encouragement for our ministries. For most of us who, either presently or in the past, the context where we live out Christ as the memory of our future is in the world of work. If we're lucky, we spend 2 or 3 hours inside of a church institution, and many of us spend 40 to 70, maybe even 80 hours a week in a workplace environment. Or if we're at home doing our work at home as homemakers, we spend even more time. And so the most of our time is spent in the workplace. That's the context in which we live out our faith. To try to answer that question, does God read financial statements, or how can we be more effective in our ministry, I'd like to do 3 things with this morning. First of all, I'd like you to help me describe what you think the modern workplace is. What is that context today, and what is it going to be in the near future? Secondly, I'd like to talk about how can we discover, or can we take a look at what the meaning of that modern workplace is, not just for us, but for others, for the society as a whole. And thirdly, to talk more specifically about ministry in that workplace. So what I'd like to do is start out and have you help me describe what is the modern workplace like? Where are people spending their days? What are they doing? How is it affecting their lives as workers? So talk to me about the modern workplace. You people have more experience.
I think money is essential to the core of the workplace.
Okay.
Either earning a lot of money or being concerned about not earning enough.
Okay, good.
I find it being a real complex institutions that we have created that are far removed from the basic needs of life.
Okay. Very good. Complex institutions removed from basics. Okay. We don't go out and plant corn that we eat I'm going to betray my own. How long does the corn take? 3 months, isn't it? Yeah.
They're very competitive.
Ah.
Very time-oriented.
Okay. Could you say a little bit more?
Trying to do it as much as you can within the time it's given you that day.
Okay. Deadline-oriented, is that a good word?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Relationships and status are role-related rather than personal-related.
Okay. Okay? Your status comes from your role rather than from your person.
And your relationships with other people depend on roles and status, not...
Okay, good. You relate to people on the basis of their roles, not on whether or not they're a nice person or whatever their personal background is.
There's a conflict of interest between my values and those that I'm, and being in the service industry, and those people that I'm working for.
Okay, conflict of interest and the values. What else? Yeah?
I tend to feel isolated in my job and sensitive when I talk to people. They're wondering whether or not I'm talking work or passing the time.
Okay. Many people work all by themselves all day, sitting in front of a computer screen or sitting in front of bookkeeping. Yes, please.
People get to make decisions that affect other people's livelihoods.
Okay. Good. Please, Sarah.
Well, same line. It seems like most work is fairly hierarchical, that it's not a team approach or something.
Okay. Can't. Sort of like that word. People at work think I have bad handwriting. It's just that I can't spell. Just, yes.
I think there's a lot of pressure to perform or to produce.
Okay.
It's threatening.
Survival.
Okay. Perform. Survival. Think about the modern workplace and what you see and read and what else about it. Yes?
It's age segregated, particularly if it's children are not involved in seeing adults at work except for teachers.
Okay. So it's segregated not only by task but by geography often. people leave their children in the suburb and go someplace else and work. Yes?
Those kind of seem to be critical negatives. Quite often it's interesting and challenging.
Yes, good.
And probably provides for some people a very satisfying experience. At least that was my experience, but there's necessarily other people.
It's very, very true. I mean, it is interesting and challenging, and we know from research that even though there's lots of job dissatisfaction, that also work is the arena in which a lot of people are working out meaning, working out personal worth. They don't do it at home, they do it on the job. It's very important. Other things about, yes?
The service industries, it is another positive. It is a capability to serve others. If you do it right.
Yep. And that's certainly where the growth of the economy is. There were 64,000 new corporations formed in 1984. Overwhelming majority of them were service-oriented. More people now work for McDonald's than work for U.S. Steel. Now, we may wonder whether or not McDonald's is a service to mankind or humankind, but in one sense it is. For a lot of people.
Kind of interesting on comment on that McDonald's thing. I was reading an article somewhere the other day that indicated that for many of the people who come into McDonald's for their initial job, this is a very good training down, and some of the banks and other places are looking for people who've had that experience running those computer-related cash registers that they have, learning how to handle the money, getting specific work habits, learning to cooperate with other people in a kind of a stressful situation, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of criticism of McDonald's, and it's a wage kind of thing, but there's also, I think, some that's a training step for many people.
Right. We dislike it a lot in some ways, but in the other ways, it is one of the places where teamwork does happen, and where people do seem to move up the ranks. It is... and you don't need a college education to become fairly significant in the McDonald's hierarchy. Okay, well, other things about the modern workplace.
You have up there where she said isolated, and she was isolated in her job, and a lot of jobs it's exactly the opposite. I deal with people from all different levels on a daily basis, and I'm very far from being isolated.
Good.
Sometimes you wish you might be.
Can I please hide today?
Yes. That's very true. There are lots of people out in this world, and more jobs are part of this service industry is lots and lots of customer or public interface. Yeah?
The service industry one is a two-edged sword along with a lot of mm-hmm. things. Where I work, there are a lot of people, and I think it's probably worldwide, frustrating, meaningless work and low wages and inadequate to raise a family.
Okay. Who was, you said that the poverty level is $14,000 per family, it's four.
I think it's in New York City, but it's right. It varies by.
You're right, the poverty status is 60% of the median.
Median's around 20, I think. For
yeah. And I don't know, I can't speak for all, but to think of a family of four living on $14,000, which is about $7 an hour, and I'm sure that we know a lot of people who don't make $7 an hour. Okay, so low wages that are inadequate. Are there other things about the modern workplace? There are a couple big ones that we've missed. Who's working today?
Everybody,
which is in the so-called paid work field. 55% of all women now work. And over 50% of all women with children under one years of age are now working. Incredible statistic when you think about how much that is, how quickly that has changed. Certainly there is a long, long history of women working. And it's not just something that happened all of a sudden because of women's liberation, everybody decided to go to work. It's been a very cumulative effect, but the effect is startling. Try to think back 30 years and think today. What else about the modern workplace is different, unique?
Well, the knowledge workers are those people who work primarily with information and that sort of thing are almost outnumber the producers, if you want to call that, in terms of making things, manufacturing kind of things.
They now do. Most people work with information. The person who's weaving baskets over here, I asked, what do you do in the trust department? What she does is move information around. She takes knowledge from one place and puts it to another place. And you do that in an office environment. And how do we move that information? It's a debate that goes on and on in our family, but I get the chance to give my point of view. I don't think we need computer education courses in schools, because everyone is going to learn how, anyone that's going to earn a living is going to learn how to use computers some way or another. They are the predominant tools of our society at this particular point. Anything else about the modern workplace? Yeah.
Well, it in many cases, I feel it provides something that the church used to provide, which is a sense of community and family, surrogate family and yep. community.
At 3M, if any five people want to do anything together, 3M will fund it. Because they know that this is what work is about. What else? Anything else about it?
The distance of travel to your wages.
Okay. Work and home are separated.
Not always.
Mm-hmm. Not always. The opposite is also true. There's a growing movement for at-home work. Part of those 64,000 corporations that were formed were people who are working at home and incorporated themselves to do whatever it was, whether they were making baskets or whether they were developing new computer software. They're working at home or they work for large corporations. There's a well-known data processing company that is all built upon women who want to work at home and they do data processing at home. Anything else you can think of about modern workplace?
There's still a lot of people that are on the road working. I mean, you just go to an airport on Monday morning, and there's lots of people that are still spending nights out on the road working. And I don't know if that's more or less than it used to be.
Okay.
Lots of travel.
And that affects the industries that support that, the service industries, the hotel, restaurants, and things. It's a big dollar situation.
Work is not something that's done during the daytime. It's done anytime. Safeway in our neighborhood is open 24 hours a day. Anything else that you can think of? I still got a little bit of room. Who are the people that are working in this modern workplace? By and large, they're college-educated folks. Not all cases, as Jan said, in the service industry, low wages, but increasingly, folks are college-educated. To be able to deal with much of this stuff takes either the values or the information that's communicated through college education. When we were talking about baby boomers, the high percentage of those baby boomers who are now college-educated. Other things that you could think of?
Well, it's much more urban than it used to be.
Okay.
I think also transient.
Very good.
To think of people being with one company for, you know, their whole work life, and there seems to be much more movement
right
among companies.
Where we live, there's a lot of alien workers.
Okay. I'll put that down.
You also don't know if that company's going to be around in 40 years either.
Okay. So it's not only transient workers.
Transient work.
Transient companies. My father worked for Atlantic, had two jobs. He worked for the Navy during the World War II, and he worked for Atlantic Richfield for 37 years. I am 37 years old, and I have had 4 jobs already that are real career-type jobs in my lifetime. And I probably will have another 3 or 4. That's just the way in which the modern workplace seems to be structured.
Well, you've thrown in a third element then besides workers and companies is the skills and the careers.
Very good.
Skills.
Part of that reflects the incredible amount of change that has happened especially in the last 30 years in the modern workplace. That change has become the constant. It's interesting, in reading this book, they tell the story about Johnstown, Johnstown, which is a Bethlehem steel town in Pennsylvania. And the stories that they tell are really heartrending because Johnstown was a town that didn't change until the steel mills started to change. And the one statement in there that was just, to me, was poignant, that for working class people in our society now, hope means that things stay the way they are. For middle and upper class people, the educated folks, change is the source of hope. Frankly, I'm a college educated, I've changed jobs. For me, if things don't change, there's no hope of advancement, no hope of growth. Well,
anything else?
One other thing that I wrote down about the modern workplace is that it's preoccupied with health and safety. Again, to use my own family history, my father started out digging ditches for Atlantic Richfield, then moved to become the fire marshal to keep fires from destroying the refinery equipment. He ended up, 90% of his time was spent with worker safety. And not just common sense safety, but the complexity of chemical safety, air quality safety, etc. Again, the tremendous change that's occurred in the last 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard farmers also say that that has changed for them, that they spend 60 or 70% of their time being mechanics, working on the machinery, keeping mm-hmm. it going, and less time actually doing farming. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I've the question, Steve, whether you know or not, is this true? Is this an American phenomenon, or is this true in Europe too?
Well, yes, please.
I'm sure it's true in Europe. I helped start a plant over in Ireland, for example, and mm-hmm. looked at some operations in some part of the continent. And the change over there is, you know, ever bit as fast as it is here, because plastics are replacing steel, computers are replacing all kinds of stuff. One of the things that may have slowed it down a bit over there is that some of their laws were much more fixed, than ours were.
They had much more, they're much more safety conscious with personal computers, and which led to things just like keyboard layouts and video display terminals and that sort of thing. But they are much more supposedly user friendly than what we have in the United States.
I think all of these forces are operative there. They may be operative in a more humane fashion. Certainly, as you read about the Japanese, many of these issues are the same. They probably are first world issues. I mean, I want to be really upfront about that. And I'm very conscious about addressing different topics from most of the people who come to be lecturers and speakers here at Holden. I'm not here to talk about the conflict between the first and the third world. I'm concerned with issues within the first world. And these are certainly, in India, in the villages, this is not the modern workplace in rural India.
In some places, these things come to clash, like in Ireland, mm-hmm. where, people are coming directly from the farm, very small farm, very labor-intense kind of a thing, to the cities working on computer equipment, for example. And mm-hmm. this is a real drastic change for the city.
Yes, and I think it is in the United States too. And there's no doubt about that. Well, I want to move next to trying to talk about meaning in the modern workplace, or if we can understand some of the dimensions that are going here. I think there is a danger of becoming nostalgic, the danger of becoming overly critical, overly negative about the contemporary workplace, and certainly in the Christian and Lutheran tradition, there is this business of withdrawal, that this is a terrible, dehumanizing, demoralizing place, so let us escape to church and Dartball and where life is good. But I think the calling for Christians is to understand and to engage the modern workplace. For me, I think what's happening in the company in which I work, and as I talk to other people in businesses and and in organizations, and perhaps even in our own families. I think there are three elements, three dimensions. One is the dimension of competence, to use an old word, maybe craft. The other dimension is community that we talked about. The other word that is sometimes used is collaboration. Word that Sarah said, teamwork as opposed to hierarchy. And the final issue, the dimension here, is the one of compensation. This is the way I've tried to understand at least my daily life inside Mal Warwick and Associates. And if you can remember back, we have the disadvantage of Holden's whiteboards in that I had to erase all of those good things that you put up there. But the talk about the complexity, the talk about tasks that are beyond one's ability to handle as an individual. One of the critical issues is, do I have the skills that are necessary to work in my setting? What's interesting is that that you hear a lot about stress in the workplace. Many of the studies that have shown that the issue in stress is one of competence. One of the reasons that we have stressed out workers is not just the pace, not just that we are modern Americans, etc. It's that we lack the confidence for the jobs that we have. And the reason that we lack the confidence is that we fear that we don't have the competence to work in that situation. Certainly I know that's the case in my particular situation. The great drive for money, which in our organization is to numbers, to be able to manipulate numbers. And some of you who know me know that I can't count to 10 without getting lost in between. And so that for me is a very stressful situation. Here we talk about community and collaboration. The great drive and the great desire and need that I see day after day is not just to work in isolation, but to work with other people, to share my skills with others, to collaborate on a common task. And as you read some of the literature in the modern work environment, those companies that are successful, those companies who have been able to develop both worker satisfaction and profitability, have been able to help people work together. The whole business about the way in which American cars used to be made. You know, I stand here, I do this one job, and I weld here, which is not the European and not the Japanese model, where people work together as a team to build that car. The other great issue is the one of compensation. Whether or not that compensation is just, adequate, etc. So I think for the individual in the workplace, that as she or he tries to make sense out of her job or his job, these three dimensions are here. And I'd like to suggest that when work becomes meaningful and satisfying, the triangle grows as an isosceles triangle, that the sides stay balanced. I think the reason that we have dissatisfaction, the reason that we have stress, the reason that there is so much unhappiness, is that these are out of whack. I still believe that being a secretary requires incredible competence to keep track of all the things that a modern secretary has to do. There's an incredible amount of craftsmanship, the collaboration that goes on, and a secretary not only with his boss or her boss, but with other co-workers, incredible collaboration. The OSHA has said that the secretarial position is the second or third most stressful occupation in America. The other two are, anyone know?
Air traffic controller.
Air traffic controller and brain surgeon. But the compensation for being a secretary is so unrelated to all of that.
In some places.
In some places. In most places. But you also have people who are earning whole bunches of money out of proportion to their competence as well as their building of community. My own particular view is that the entertainment business is an example of that. The distorted amount of compensation that people receive for being public entertainers with a relatively modest contribution to skill or competence. And certainly, entertainment business by its nature is non-collaborative, non-community building. Well, to me, I think what is, that this is the issue for those of us who work in the modern workplace. It is, yes, please.
Where does personal, not compensation, but personal feelings of work, where does that come in, on compensation? Or, like, I feel like I'm doing a really good job, no one pays me a lot, and it doesn't necessarily need a lot of competence. I mean, and I can't think of a specific job that entails, but some people feel really, really good about what they're doing, even if society doesn't, or the person doesn't get paid a lot. Where does that fit in the triangle?
For me, and I've written down a note, what I call it's the dilemma of self-worth in the modern work environment. Yeah. And it's an issue that gets addressed for me all the time at Mal Warwick & Associates, where they're tremendously diverse people. Many of them are very well educated. Many of them have very radical politics. And I've learned the most, frankly, from a Jewish woman who is there, who is a practicing Jew. And we've talked about this again and again, because we keep running up to people who are very, very unhappy. And they're well paid, they have challenging jobs, they have a chance to be part of community and to collaborate with others. And there are other people who are less well paid, who have less freedom to use their competence, and are lower, and they seem to be much happier and much more satisfied. To me, the dilemma is that the working environment is a place in which we have forced the contemporary person to work out his or her self-worth. There aren't many other arenas in society left. The family is disintegrated in many ways. The church is not a viable institution. Community politics are very complex. And so people have to work their self-worth out in the work environment. The dilemma is that that's a terrible place to find and discover your self-worth. There's just no way you're ever going to get paid enough to convince yourself that you're a great human being. And I think, again, to use entertainment, no matter how much those people are paid, the question of self-worth and identity always seems to be open, unresolved. One of the interesting things about compensation, just to push it a little bit, and why I think the self-worth issue is so difficult, the major vehicle for demonstrating happiness and status in our society is the television. Right? Those are the people that are role models, and even if we don't watch TV, I think it still has an impact on us. An interesting study was done a few years ago. The average TV family, to maintain the average Bill Cosby standard of living, the who's the family ties family, Keatons, would take four times the salary of an average American. So there's no way that you can ever, by your compensation level, reach what the society says is your self-worth, your status. What I think the woman in, in our conversations with Evie, this woman, the people who have that seem to have discovered satisfaction in their jobs, the people who seem to be able to build community and collaboration, are those people who have self-worth that has been given to them. They come with it to the job. Somehow, they got it in growing up, in education, wherever it might be. They learn that they are valuable, worthwhile human beings. And they brought that with them to the job.
I think I agree with you, but would you agree that there are a lot of people that look for self-worth in the job?
Yes.
I mean, I see people coming out of college and you ask them what they want to do, you know, they'd say, first of all, I want to be making $30,000 by the time I'm 25.
Yes.
And, you know, just get all wrapped up. And you know, if their job goes down, and what they're working on is no longer important,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're devastated.
Yes.
Until they can build up.
Right. That's why I think it's a dilemma. I mean, the society has said that's where you're going to get your status. That's why you go to college. And the irony is that you can't do it on the job. The painful irony. Yes?
Well, just because self-worth is being defined that the more money you make, the more self-worth you've got.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Christians don't come to the job with that approach if they accept Christianity.
Right. I would think, for me, and we talked about this a little bit before, I think what Christian ministry is not consciously doing something to somebody else. I think Christian ministry in the workplace is being a baptized person. Christian ministry is whatever baptized persons do. And I think that means to be competent, that means to build collaboration, and to somehow deal with this issue of compensation for ourselves. And I... if we have time, I haven't worked that out for myself, but I have some glimmers about how that can be worked out.
Isn't there a distortion of what success is? You know, the Christian success is not the same as somebody who has
That's correct.
Priorities and getting all they can get.
That's correct. Yeah. We have a different purpose. Let me just complete this picture, maybe, and that will take us to the point that Gertrude is making. Because I think the issues for contemporary organizations and businesses in America, in the first world, are really the same. And instead of three C's, I think it's three P's. Public, people, public, and profits. These are the three issues that I see in the company that I work for, and as I again talk with other people, that they need people who are competent, who have craft. Successful companies don't make profits. Successful companies build skilled people who can work together to serve the public. Profits are a byproduct of that ability to do those two things. And again, I think what has happened is that we can see that there's a distortion of the triangle. That if we spend all our time developing skilled people or serving the public and didn't make money at it, and there are lots of companies that have done this, as great as that sounds, and they don't make profits. On the other hand, there are also lots of companies that have tried to make short-term profits at the expense of the people and the expense of the public, and they go out of business. Again, I think it's a matter of trying to maintain that particular balance.
But there are companies who do that intentionally.
Intentionally what?
Make a short-term profit.
Yes.
Quick and dirty. I mean, that's...
Right.
That our system not only allows that,
but it encourages,
provides an atmosphere for that. That's what the stock market is all about.
Yeah. And it's ultimately self-destructive.
Depending on your definition of self-destruction.
Yeah. I think that that's true. There are a lot of reasons for that, not just... See, I don't think it's just the profits. I mean, I'm intrigued as I talk with business people and as I look at the... everybody says they're out for profits. I think that there are other issues that are really operating than money. Status, power, racism, sexism. I think that the decisions are really made there that this is a sham. We're doing this to be more profitable. When in fact, I think companies are doing that for purposes of power or revenge. Yes?
I'm in public administration, so you have something for your public organizations rather than the profits?
Sure. I think public institutions should be profitable. I think nonprofit organizations should be profitable.
I'm thinking like in particular education, where they're supposed to be developing people in the public, but I know there always comes the accountability and the money issue.
Well, I think, like the parable of the 10 talents, there should be more money when you started than when you end than when you start. Whether or not you're a for-profit company, not-for-profit, or a public institution. In a sense, this is the major profitability. And for a public institution, that would be to be able to work within your budget, so to speak. Or for a nonprofit, to be able to have some sort of cash reserve at the end of a budget year.
But public institutions like schools and so on, they compete for dollars.
Yes.
They have to ultimately go to legislatures, boards of supervisors, whatever you call it, to compete with other public institutions for dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same kind of thing. It's just that they have a narrower market to deal with.
Right. That's true.
When it comes to getting their money.
That's true. But there is another way to look at the crisis of American education. And I don't want to take the present administration, both at the state level and at the national level, off the hook. But one of the reasons that I think that schools are in trouble is that they didn't do a good job of making sure that the best teachers were in the classroom. They didn't do a good job of supporting those teachers. They didn't do a good job of recruiting those teachers. And they didn't serve the public. Public schools, in many cases, were arrogant. And there's still remnants of that. We teach, parents, you stay home. We're responsible for all of this. And I think that contributes to declining support, financial support, profits, if you will. I think that's true of public institutions. When public institutions stop serving the public, when they stop getting the very best people in those public bureaucracies, then it's very natural that they're not going to get the funding that they need. Now, certainly there are other factors at work.
The other backside of that is that if they keep getting funding by formula, they can snub their nose at the public and whatnot until eventually, you know, it catches up to them.
Steve, I've done a lot of bartering, and I'm just wondering what slide that comes in, where there's no money exchange, but it's just a trade.
Well, but it's still compensation, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's why I said compensation, not salary. There are other compensations.
Well, what I mean is, in the future, is that a viable option, or is that just an odd thing that happens?
Well, I think it's a very viable.
Well, bartering is the same as using cash, only you're using other things of value. It's exchanging things of value.
Yeah.
Well, the money exchange things are perceived value, not real value.
Well, the same is true that when you're bartering something, you perceive the value of what he wants to trade you for. And it may not, whether it's scalps or wampum or whatever it might be.
See, because I think, well, that for me, and I haven't worked this out in all its nuts and bolts. I don't have a system to offer you. But I think there is something about the Christian faith that suggests a new economics, that there is a new definition of success. There's a new definition of how you put together a daily life, and how you put together your life financially is that you start to barter. And I think that the Christian faith frees us to explore some of those new ways to have sufficiency, new ways to have enough to make a living. The other thing that I think, and again, I haven't experienced completely in my own life, because frankly, I'm paid a fairly good salary. I could earn more money than I am earning if I wanted to commute to San Francisco and work for a commercial, high-powered advertising agency. I think I could get that kind of job, and I could probably double my income. But having said that, I still get a fairly good salary. So I'm speaking out of that. But I still believe that what the Christian faith does, as I said earlier, is provide us with long-term insecurity and short-term security. In the sense that when we've heard the good news, we can then also hear the bad news. And the bad news is that there is no security, that the person who's your boss in the trust department, Julie, is not secure. Even if he's been there 15 years and he's a vice president, change can come and he can lose his job the next day. We as Christians can face the bad news of just how insecure the modern workplace is. But I think that the corollary, the good news is that there is that short-term certainty that we know that our life and our being is certain and secure in Jesus Christ. I don't know for sure what that means beyond those words. I think we discover that each day, what that kind of certainty means. I think some of it comes because we exist in Christian community and we are reaffirmed and supported in that certainty. The other thing that I do think, that the other resource we bring to the modern workplace that I've discovered more and more, is that we have practice in community building. Those of us who take our Christian faith seriously are at least partial experts in the business of community. And I don't just mean that in a spiritual goody-goody way. I mean, I am amazed how few people have had real life experience in working with other people on shared tasks. I think the church hasn't always done that well, but at least they've tried. On most Sundays, we have a meal that we eat together that is both a symbolic and a real manifestation of that kind of collaboration. That we take one loaf and we break it into pieces. That we take one cup and we share that cup. Now, I'm not suggesting that we take that loaf of bread to the workplace, but I am suggesting that that experience of community enables us to be more intentional and to be more skilled in the workplace, community building and collaboration. Questions about this, comments? Sure.
I guess, you know, you talk about companies as if they have a personality, and really a company is just a group of people, so, you know, as a Christian, you either have to work to bring those values into that company, or else maybe you're a hypocrite if you don't go find an organization to work for that has the values that are consistent with your, maybe that says you have some options as far as compensation and survival and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I think we do have options.
But companies do have a personality.
Sure.
I mean, what evidence is that all that has to happen is that there has to be a few key people that lead, and the whole complexion of that changes. I was a pastor of a church that had turnover. I did 30% turnover in members every year because we were heavily dependent on the aerospace industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of that church was constantly changing. Because of the people were continually reorganizing this organization. It's sort of like if your family, you know, you had a different group of kids.
Yes.
Give a group of kids every 6 months, you know. And it was incredible when I look back on it.
Mm-hmm.
And very debilitating.
Yes.
To those people who were there for the long term and were seeking a stable community environment, and become disillusioned with the church, and that's it. And did this indefinable thing as to why they left,
mm-hmm,
the church, and which is why people leave companies, I think, too.
Right. The big code word these days is corporate culture, and a corporation may not have a personality, but it certainly has a culture in which values operate. One of the values of the aerospace industry is instability. That change for the sake of profits is better than stability for the sake of the people who work there, perhaps.
And the personnel managers are the most powerful people in developing corporate culture. Because
right.
They hire people either consciously or unconsciously who fit in corporate mold.
Right. The point that I think where those connect is that last word where you say options. My conviction is that as Christians, we do have options. That part of the good news is that if our identity is a given, if in Christ and in our baptism we are given an identity that no one can take away from us, I think that that opens up options for us. The way in which, to go back to Sarah's issue of self-worth, the way in which so many people work out self-worth is by, and it's interesting to the studies that have been done on this, people do it two ways. How do most of us develop self-worth? We do one of two things, sometimes both.
Where do we dress?
No.
Through the family.
Family?
Change our thinking?
No.
Somebody tells us we've done well, and we then internalize that.
Okay, that's one way in which self-worth is what the other message that people do. The other component of self-worth is our actual achievement. We accomplish something. Now, the way in which we deal with this as human beings, and the studies of workers are fascinating, most people tend to overestimate their own achievements and underestimate the achievement of others. So that our status, our self-worth, is A, we lie to ourselves and we negate the contribution of others. Now, as you can see, that makes this part of the triangle very difficult. That's why companies that are effective want people who come with self-worth. Now, I think the Christian gospel is that we come with a self-worth that does not depend on our achievements and enables us to be in community with others. that those of us who are a toe and those of us that are a hand, etc., are all part of one body. The Christian gospel is not that we're all alike and that we all have the same skill and that we all have the same competence. The Christian gospel is that we all have different gifts that contribute to one common mission. So, again, I think that the good news for us is that we don't have to work out our self-worth at the expense of others, nor do we have to depend ultimately on our own competence or achievement. All of us, I think, realize how difficult it is to live lives that are based only on achievement. We all have certain weaknesses. We all age. We're all susceptible to illness and disease, and we're all susceptible to unemployment. Things that are beyond our control. If we based our self-worth only on our competence and ability, we ultimately would lose. There's no way that you can be achieving all the time. Well, other questions, other comments?
I don't really know how to word it. I know Julie is unhappy with her job, and it's because basically, I don't know that it's the pay so much, but it's just the what the employer does with her labor, I guess. What direction it goes to.
Yeah. People come to work for Mount Warwick and Associates because they think we make a positive contribution to the public. Julie doesn't think that the bank is making a positive contribution to the public. At least I hear that. I'm not sure that it uses all of her crafts and competence either. It provides compensation, but I'm not, again, it's an imbalance. Yeah.
One of the problems I think we have, and I was in employee relations and personnel work for a long time, is that many people come to a job because it's a job and it pays some money. And mm-hmm. one of the things we tried to do, in, well, at least in the later years after we got a little smarter, was to try to find people who came, who fit the mm-hmm. kind of goals and activities and fit into the organization, had some competence which we could build on, this sort of thing. And my advice to some of the people who were always so unhappy was, hey, you know, maybe this isn't your bag. Maybe you ought to go somewhere else where you can get some satisfaction right. out of what you're doing that suits you better. Now, that's not always easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, I just feel awful unhappy with people who got a job and then they stay there and bitch and complain and feel hurt and put upon and all this sort of stuff. Because they may be in the wrong culture or the wrong organization or in the wrong, maybe making use of their lesser skills rather than their greater skills.
I think that that's a mutual responsibility. It's the responsibility of the employer to make sure that they've hired the person that fits the job. It's the responsibility of the prospective employee to find out whether this job fits. To use your, you know, you've got options.